The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here. Today
FM. Let's chat about some of the things in the week trending. We had Helen Vaughan, psychotherapist with Minut Counselling, and Owen Tomás McDermott, Managing Director of the Communications Clinic. And Helen, I think it's rare enough to see a newspaper editorial describing a TD as an intolerable idiot. But that's what the Irish Examiner has had to say about the Tipperary Independent TD, Matty McGrath. We touched on this with Daniel McConnell earlier in the week, but I think it is worth coming back to. Why have they called him an intolerable idiot?
Because he is trying to compare the rules around reopening indoor dining with Nazi Germany. He tried to claim that those two were similar or the same. In fact, his quote was that, where has it gone? It's exactly the same if you want to study it, exactly the same. Restriction of movements couldn't go where they wanted to go. And he's come in for huge criticism.
I'm not aware of any concentration camps been set up in this country.
No, and I don't know why this keeps coming up, you know, with people trying to compare certain things with the Holocaust that are incomparable. They're not genocide, so they're not the same. They're not even similar. And it just offends so many people. And I just don't know why people from a communications point of view don't just learn, leave the Holocaust where it is, you know, obviously commemorate it and it's an important event to be aware of, but stop trying to compare it with modern day things that are not the same or similar at all.
But Owen Tomás McDermott, he has form in this because this is the third time this year he's done it, which clearly, given that he's been reprimanded previously and again now by the Holocaust Museum, he clearly thinks this is a rich, he's onto something here. He seems quite proud of himself to be making these comparisons.
Well, I think he is, and I think Matty is getting, unfortunately, what Matty wants, which is attention, and that seems to be part
even
of his motivations.
Even when you've been called an intolerable idiot.
Well, I would call him...
Or does
him
he actually get that? Oh, mainstream media is calling me an intolerable idiot, so that's good.
Well, perhaps it is a case, though, of empty vessels make most noise, really, because it is grossly offensive, it's moronic, and the idea of invoking Nazis and Nazi Germany is grossly offensive. And we have to remember, as Helen touched on, this is the and was the single worst scourge in human history, where 6 million people were murdered. And the notion of comparing the vaccine passport to that is outrageous. But we had, again, a similar example with Rose Conway Walsh earlier this week as well, making the comparison with Rosa Parks. Now, she has since apologised.
Yeah, she actually, in fairness to her, and it was a stupid thing to say, but she did come back and say afterwards, look, she had made a big mistake.
She made an apology. But as Helen touched on, that idea of choosing your comparisons, choosing your analogies and how you express and communicate the points that you're making has to be consciously thought of and carefully thought of, particularly of people who hold office and of standing. However, I think what Matty has learned from his other two situations around these types of comparisons is that it works for him. He mightn't again, for example, want to be called a moron or insufferable, but perhaps again it feeds into part of what he is trying to achieve with his own profile.
Of course, I love his quote, if you study history, and I'm not an historian, you can see what happened in Germany. Huh? Helen?
I don't know, is it all about attention? And is that sometimes what politics is about? And there's no press that's bad press, even though I tend to disagree with that.
Okay, it's extraordinary. But is anyone going to do anything about this? I mean, are there any rules inside in Dáil Éireann about appropriate use of language? Is anyone going to censure him over this?
No, I don't think so. But I think if you look at it, Matt, and again, I know that there are comparisons and we can make the comparisons with Trump's America, Johnson's England, that the expression of these ideas or these comparisons and being very blatant in the type of points that you're making, whether it has a touch of racism in elsewhere, it seems to work in certain circumstances. And this cult of personality, where in fact, really any sort of coverage, all it does is make you more famous, to that type of Kardashian level of fame, where actually really it doesn't matter what you do, it just adds to the profile.
But yet he may actually have a debatable point in relation to whether the restrictions are an affront to civil liberties, but is anyone actually picking up on that point because of the excessiveness, Helen, of the language that he's using?
I don't think so, because surely the debate is lost then, because we're now debating the rights and wrongs of using the Holocaust as an example or a comparison to anything else and disagreeing with that, and we're not actually talking about, although I'm sure we will, the ins and outs of indoor dining and how it should work and how it shouldn't work. So I kind of feel the battle is lost in a way. But yeah, as you say, he's done it a few times, so there's obviously something else going on there.
Okay, can you imagine how he'd be behaving if he was in Australia, Helen? Tell us about the lockdown that they have now decided upon in Sydney in Australia.
Well, their lockdown has been extended for another 2 weeks. It's already gone on for, I think, about a month, or no, 3 weeks. And they're having about kind of 90 to 100 new cases a day.
Which is a fraction of what we have, and yet they've gone into lockdown.
I know, it's kind of, it's weird to read it and kind of like, do I feel sorry for people over there? They've done so well in terms of containing the pandemic so far, and here's an outbreak that seems to be growing. And they're doing things like shutting down a building and not letting people out of an apartment block in Bondi because there were 9 cases reported in there. So it does seem over the top, but then if it's kept them relatively COVID-free for most of the last year and a half, I don't know, I envy the life that they've had when we didn't, you know, when we were locked down for months on end.
I do, I agree with you on that, Helen, and I do envy their freedoms, but I think those freedoms perhaps led them to feeling quite relaxed, particularly around vaccinations, where I think they're at less than 10% of people who've been vaccinated, where when you compare it to us, we're over 60% people, or about 60% people have vaccinated. That when what we have learned, and I think particularly with the Delta variant, is that really the only way that you can be able to live with COVID is that vaccinations are the way to do it. And that what you're now seeing in Australia is having approach with a zero COVID approach, that did lead to people feeling perhaps we don't need to get vaccinated. And now what we have learned about Delta is that it's fitter, it's faster, it's stronger than any other variant that they have seen now. And that idea of being able to keep it out previously doesn't appear to be going to be a success now because it is spreading so quickly. So rather than dealing with kind of any old inmate, they are now dealing with an escape artist that can get through it quicker. So I think that's what's actually going to be the issue now with Australia. They had a very clear and had absolute clarity of approach at the start, and we had a muddled kind of ad hoc ambiguous approach to it. But in fact, that we now, through the perhaps that occurring, have an appreciation that vaccination is important, that the Australians, unfortunately, if you look at the statistics, don't seem to have grasped yet.
Yeah, was there else perhaps the thing, Helen, that in parts of the Southern Hemisphere, and I don't know if you could say the same about New Zealand, which I know you know well as Australia, they became a little bit self-satisfied about their success in stopping the spread of COVID-19, and perhaps there was a little bit of hubris involved here.
I don't know, because I think they were successful, because I do watch New Zealand closely, and I remember a few times they'd have a cluster of 2 or 3 or 4 cases and I would think, oh, here we go, they're going to be similar to us, it'll grow and grow and grow. And they don't. They were able to identify who was involved, who were close contacts, and stop it from spreading, which I don't know that we really ever achieved here. I guess we did to a degree, but not at their level, where their app literally identified where people were at exact times and they put out that info and they were like, if you're in this shop or you were in this cafe, stay home till you get a test, or go get a test and yeah, isolate. And I think they were really good at, I don't know what the scientific term is, but snuffing out the clusters and making sure they didn't grow and become widespread. Like, for example, Auckland was shut down, locked down for about a month, and it worked, and it didn't spread to the rest of the country. You know, and I sort of think maybe they were better than us in some ways, as you say, Tomás, but this time it's hard to know with Delta if the same kind of the same restrictions work at the same level, because it's so fast and strong and efficient as a disease.
And you see then what's happening as well. Apparently Indonesia now has the highest incidence in the world, gone ahead of Brazil. And of course, South Africa has been destroyed by it as well, and which has led to all sorts of other political violence as well, but for other reasons too. So as a communications expert on Tomás McDermott, what do you make of the HSE teaming up with dating platforms such as Tinder and Hinge and Plenty of Fish to encourage vaccine take-up?
Interesting bedfellows was my initial reaction. But I think if you apply the marketing principle of you go where the people are, and you, if the people you want to reach, you go to them. And that would have been one of the criticisms, I suppose, during COVID, was that the HSE weren't utilising channels of communication to those different audiences or different groups, for example, social media, the use of influencers. And now they are partnering with dating apps where they're going to be providing them with different resources and stickers that they can put onto people's profiles, or that people can put onto their profiles to say, I've been vaccinated, or vaccine saves lives. And I suppose that it would appear that certainly Tinder are incentivizing people to get vaccinated, because they are going to have a thing called a super like, which will allow profiles stand out on the app for people who have been vaccinated. So I think it's interesting, although I think it would have to be only one element in a communication strategy, because I think if people haven't been vaccinated, it boils down to a couple of reasons. One reason is they're just not at that point in the queue yet, or they've decided they don't want to get vaccinated. Either they don't care or that they misunderstand the impact that a vaccine can have. If it is the latter, if it is being able to influence people that they should take a vaccine, that is more tricky and trickier and harder to do rather than sticking a sticker on a dating app. So yes, I think it is sensible and it is a good way of reaching a certain cohort, but it certainly won't be a singular method of influencing them. And that harder piece of getting people to engage if they don't believe they should, or getting people to believe that vaccines are a positive thing, is a more challenging thing to do.
Okay, we need to take a break. A listener wants to know, is it 60% of the population or 60% of the adult population that's vaccinated? It's 60% of the adult population, and one of the developing conversations over the next couple of weeks will be, well, then once all adults who want the vaccine have received it, if we then move on to teenagers as well, maybe from about the age of 13 upwards, to be vaccinated to achieve herd immunity, something that Leo Varadkar indicated yesterday. Something else we did discuss on Monday and Tuesday's programme, what happened in England, a reaction to three of their footballers, who all happened to be black, missing penalties in the shootout against Italy in the Euro 2020 final. Helen, has there been any success amongst the authorities, the police, in finding at least some of those responsible for some of the worst racist abuse?
Yeah, they've actually arrested four people, and I don't know if you gauge that as successful given how many comments there were and huge uproar there was. But four people have been arrested, which I think is a big win in terms of the battle against racism, to show that there are consequences if you're going to write on social media or wherever online, you know, that you can be traced and you can be found. And these people have been shamed, obviously, in their local area, but also nationally. People know who they are. They've been named. Some of them have lost jobs or, you know, aren't allowed to go to local pubs or whatever. Three suspects were named as, you know, an estate agent who's 37, a plasterer who's 49, a children's football coach who's 50. You know, when you wonder, they've probably all lost jobs or lost their roles within the community.
They claim they were hacked, that they didn't do the posting at all themselves.
Well, and then I think that's further weakness, that you won't even own up to what you did, even when you're caught red-handed, if that's the right phrase. This to me is good, that it shows that online you're not just this faceless bot who can write whatever you want.
Given the volume of the abuse, it strikes me, Antomos, that there's only a bit of a gesture involved in this. Four seems an incredibly low number of people to have been arrested.
It does seem low. Now, they are saying dozens more are being investigated, and you would hope that that develops and those investigations develop into maybe more arrests. But certainly it does feel like it is a trend now that we are seeing with people posting abuse, whether it's racism or otherwise, on social media, that this trend of people being held responsible for their actions is occurring. So, for example, we're seeing the four people being arrested. We saw more recently as well Christian Jessen having to pay Arlene Foster 125,000 for spreading lies about her. We also saw Stephen Nolan, for example, receiving out-of-court settlements for Twitter abuse that he had received. And that is, again, I think, a trend that we have to start seeing more of.
But we need to have it here in Ireland as well, because the Ireland international footballer, Cyrus Christie, has been the subject of some pretty vile racist abuse here in Ireland as well.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not to say that there are no racists or homophobic people in Ireland. Absolutely not. And that is something that we should start seeing, that perhaps on Garda Síochána do more of. But we've spoken about this before, Matt. This won't stop until the platforms themselves are held to account, and that the platforms themselves have the money taken out of their pockets, and they need to be treated as the publisher, whether it is Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. They should be the ones held to account, like Today FM would, or any other station would be held to account for something somebody would say. They should be similarly held to account for the things that people post on their platforms.
And while we have to understand and appreciate and admit that there are issues like this in Ireland, Helen, there does seem to be a particular issue in Britain at present. And I see there's a former Conservative Party MP who said that effectively Boris Johnson's Tory party is a sort of an English or British version of what happened with Trump in the United States of America. This Brexit takeover and this intolerance and hypocrisy and gaslighting is now very much a British phenomenon as much as one in America under Trump.
Yeah, none of that is news to me or to anyone, surely. You know, the Conservative Party there has always been dodge, for want of a better phrase. You know, she's saying it's lost its moral compass. And I'm like, did it ever have a moral compass? You know,
I think there has been a significant shift in the British Tory party for all the things that Irish people might have against them. The level of racism and xenophobia been displayed and the behaviour over Brexit is not something that we've experienced in recent decades.
Yeah, I don't know. It's been happening for so long in the last few years that, I don't know, to me when she was saying this, I was like, yeah, none of this is new. I have felt this way for a while, you know, and but she's not even with the Conservatives anymore. So she's kind of insulting them from the outside in. I'm not surprised.
Of course, we also have a Fox News equivalent, GB News, which we've discussed in this programme since it started 4 weeks ago, which is targeting that sort of what they call the anti-woke culture in the United Kingdom. There's been some remarkable stories out of there in the last week.
Even in the last week, Matt, they have said that really their raison d'etre is to provide a platform for free speech. That their critics would say that's a euphemism for far-right propaganda. And two significant things happened to them this week. A gentleman by the name of Guto Harry took a knee during a discussion about racism of English players. That, you would have said, wouldn't have gone down well with the GB News viewership or their editorial direction.
So just to explain, this guy is a former associate of Boris Johnson's when Johnson was a mayor of London.
Yeah, he was on Boris Johnson's team when Boris Johnson was mayor of London, but he's also a former BBC journalist, a Welsh fella, and he was one of the, he took a knee and this got criticism.
It's quite significant in relation to that because they put out a statement in GB News saying that they didn't have any editorial guidelines as to how people were to behave and what to say because they've been trying to market themselves as being fearless in what people can say and not trying to corral people into certain points of view. And then almost immediately they said he had failed to live up to their editorial standards, that suddenly taking a knee was against what they actually stood for. And then as a result of that, there was such a backlash from the few viewers that apparently they now have no viewership.
Well, that's it, that the audiences recorded or the audience data recorded that there was zero viewers, perhaps because A, maybe nobody was watching anyway, or B, because of protest. But I think if you're looking, it seems that the wheels are coming off GB News. Andrew Neil, their chairman and one of their main presenters, has now taken to hiding in a chateau in France and it doesn't look like he's coming back anytime soon. But it has raised the question for me, why hasn't it worked? Because if you do look, for example, at Fox News in America that share a similar ideology, Fox News is a roaring success. And it was reminded of the Gay Byrne quote that said, we are all in the entertainment business, even the news is in the entertainment business. And the Fox, in terms of its presentation, we mightn't agree with the content, in terms of its presentation, is really slick, is really shiny. The presenters tend to be quite attractive.
Something else I learned today, that they've been running effectively a campaign against vaccination on Fox News, encouraging anti-vaxxers. Every single presenter on Fox News is vaccinated.
But this is
the hypocrisy.
The hypocrisy
of it is
incredible. But Fox News, we mightn't agree, it looks great. Whereas if you look at GB News, it kind of looked like Wayne's World. And so, yes, the ideology might be similar, but that the presentation of it, and I think there is learning where when you look back to Nazi Germany or you look at it now, not to do a Matty McGrath, but if you do compare them and say, well, actually, how do you spread fascism? You make it shiny and you make it attractive to people to watch. And GB News haven't managed to do the latter.
Is that encouraging, Helen?
I don't know. I wonder about the UK. Is there not a big enough market for that level of far right, whereas in the US there is? And, you know, maybe I'm wrong. There's
a big
enough
population
to...
in the UK. And, I mean, look at UKIP surged and effectively now the Brexiteers have taken over the Tory party. So maybe there is a market for that. Or maybe they're already well served.
Or is it just so messy, you know, that as you say, their comms following this guy taking the knee, they talk about free speech, then they say we don't have a line on taking the knee, then they said it was unacceptable, breach of our standards, you know, and they're just flip-flopping all over the place and people don't know. So are you far right? Are you not? Are you for this? Are you for that? Is there just general confusion around their communication and nobody knows whether they're on their side or another side, depending, you know, wherever you sit politically?
Well, I think the whole thing is very interesting. Like if you go back to the previous piece around the Conservatives and them becoming Trumpian, I think that's an accurate assessment. And then the question is, well, what has happened to the Conservative Party? But what has happened to people in Britain where they're willing to accept this because it works? Like we've seen Trumpism has worked. We see this style of politics in Britain has worked. Why? Because who knows? And that's the question I'm struggling with is why are people willing to accept lies, hypocrisy? What is the motivation?
Because Boris Johnson entertains them.
Well, is it the cult of personality? Is it back to the Trump? Is it back to the Kardashian piece? And that's the element that is provoking thought for me, because you would see that the policies that the Conservatives have, for example, don't tend to be in the best interest of most of their voters. Similarly, Trump's policies weren't in the best interest of many of his voters. Why were they voting for him? If you look at why did they accept hypocrisy, like the Fox News guys who are majority of them vaccinated yet telling people not to get vaccinated, why is this occurring? And that's the bigger question and the most worrying question, because the politicians, particularly the Conservatives and the Republicans in America, are going to approach it this way because it's working for them. The reason why the Conservatives are backing Boris is because he is winning. The reason why most of the Republican candidates want to have Trump's backing is because they know it'll help them win. Why the voters are willing to accept it is the most worrying question, and an answer I simply don't have at this point.
Okay. Listeners, I'm amazed this has been reported as a British issue of the racism when a mixed race family was hounded out of Ireland for daring to be in a television advert. Very lazy reporting. We had that family with us on the programme. We did talk about the Cyrus Christie, the Irish footballer, and we have said that this is an issue for Ireland as well. So it's not something we're ignoring or pretending doesn't actually happen in Ireland. Owen Tomás McDermott, Managing Director of the Communications Clinic. Helen Vaughan, psychotherapist with Maynooth Counselling. Thank you both for joining us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today.